Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Rob, John Williams here on WGN. Yeah, we'll have to listen to a little Natalie Cole this afternoon. We've been thinking about her off the air. Maybe you have too. The daughter of the late crooner Nat King Cole. Her mother was a former Duke Ellington Orchestra singer, Marla Hawkins. Ellington passed away too young. She said, "We were the Black Kennedys. The who's who of entertainment and jazz would come through our house. They had an affluent neighborhood and lifestyle." She was a terrific singer, and I think all of us who remember some of her songs, This Will Be and others, maybe remember most fondly that song that they were able to digitally reproduce with her father. So on the show today, we'll do some of the features that we normally do on the Saturday edition of the John Williams Show. We'll visit with the Mincing Rascals. Our weekly podcast dropped on Wednesday of this week. It normally moves on Friday, but we'll feature a segment from that that you may want to comment on in the 1:30 segment. And in the 2:30 segment, we'll play back or we'll do our Vibe Score series, where we take a look at some of the things that people are talking about on our Vibe Score app and what they're saying and how they are scoring the news. Speaking of the news, I don't know that this is an epiphany. I'm about to say something that you probably knew anyway, but let's just talk about this for a minute. This is a rule that you can take with you in 2016. Tell your kids to take this rule in 2016 as well. If you use the internet to punish somebody, the internet will punish you back. If you use the internet in any way, this means social media, it means Facebook, it means Twitter, it means anything. If you use the internet to punish somebody, the internet will punish you back. This is a story about a guy who posted a man accused of sending racist private messages to a Black Lives Matter Facebook page has lost his job with food giant Archer Daniels Midland. ADM, supermarket to the world, right? One of their employees, good guy, anonymous. You don't know him. I don't know him. But he was upset about Black Lives Matter. A lot of people are on both sides of that story. People are just upset. We've got to do something. I get it. But there's a lot of hate going on back and forth. And so this guy posted a private racist message on their Facebook page. His name is Brad Schultz. And he used a racial epithet and referring to the group, and he told them to get out of town with your bleeping protesting. His message added that they should just leave because white people don't like you. His post was shared more than 1,000 times. Archer Daniels Midland saw it. He doesn't work there anymore. They said they did an investigation. He no longer works there. They wouldn't say if he quit or got fired. These remarks, they said, are unacceptable and do not reflect our values. Screenshots show that he later apologized to Black Lives Matter. Seemingly after the comments had gone public, he said, quote, "It was cruel and I didn't mean it." He said, "In no way is my workplace affiliated with these comments. Please delete them, everybody." But, of course, that just means they re-forward them and share them, and so he lost his job. What's the rule for 2016? If you use the internet to punish, the internet will punish you. Nobody knows that lesson better today than the still mayor of Superior, Wisconsin. Have you been following this story? December 21st, there's a guy named Bruce Hagan. He's been the mayor of Superior, Wisconsin for 16 years. They say he's a good guy, and I guess if he's been elected that many times, people support him up there. Anyway, here's a story that says, on December 21st, Hagan responded on Facebook to a post that included a photograph of First Lady Michelle Obama. So as I read that, he is responding to something that was posted on Facebook. And now this is his response. And the thing he's responding to is a photograph of the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and the mayor of Superior wrote, "This is unbelievable. She and her Muslim partner have destroyed the fabric of democracy that was so very hard fought for." unbelievable. She and her Muslim partner have destroyed the fabric of democracy that was so very hard fought for. So that went out, and you can imagine what happened. And the city council heard about it, and community leaders heard about it, and they said, hey, you got to take that down. You've got to apologize. You've got to fix that. And he said, no, I'm going to stand by that. So the local leader of the at the Islamic Center in Superior, Wisconsin, it's near Duluth, those two cities, they have an Islamic Center, and the local leader heard about it. And instead of calling for a press conference and demanding his ouster or whatever, he said, why don't you come and have dinner with me? And let's just talk a little bit about this. I thought that was a refreshing take, right? He didn't say, let's boycott Superior, Wisconsin, or whatever else you might say. He said, let's just sit down and talk about this. He said, I have a good feeling about all of this, said the local Muslim leader. He said he knows this guy is being different than the man who created the stir with that Facebook post. And so before we call for his resignation, let's just hear him out. And now the mayor has issued an apology, which goes like this. Recent days have brought considerable responses to my Facebook post. That's got to be the understatement of the new year. Regarding our president, the anger, pain, and extremely foul comments are duly noted, as are the substantial numbers of positive messages received. I have zero ill will, disrespect, or animosity toward the Muslim religion. Being a strong, God-loving Christian, I adhere to the teachings of Christianity in accepting and encouraging faith and all respective beliefs. Like most, my daily existence evolves around the basic beliefs and principles of family, God, and the preservation set forth in our Constitution. My reference to the president being a Muslim was indeed a poor choice of words in a moment of anger. My fear is we are a nation of all walks of life, religious beliefs, different political persuasions, and hardworking citizens that are standing by watching our country being denigrated by all parts of Washington, D.C. I apologize to the Muslim community for being insensitive. My comment was intended to shed light on the resistance of President Obama and the lack of leadership qualities to stand up for America against the world's enemies. Finally, he writes, the Muslim communities across the world do not embrace what is occurring by these terrorists. I was wrong to include them in my comment. I ask you accept my apology as we go forward, blah, blah, blah. The apology is a delicate art, wouldn't you say? And sometimes they get it right and sometimes they get it wrong. But once again, the rule for 2016, if you use the internet to punish, the internet will punish you. This guy goes on Facebook and he's going to teach Obama a lesson. He's going to out him for the Muslim he is and how he's ruining this country. And then the internet responded. Recent days, he says, have brought considerable responses to my Facebook post regarding our president. The anger, pain, and extremely foul comments are duly noted, he wrote. But then he can't resist. You know, he still wants to fight that fight a little bit. He still wants to say, yeah, but I still don't think I'm all wrong. I'm just apologizing because I know I ticked a lot of you off. So he has to say it this way. The anger, pain, and foul comments are duly noted, as are the substantial number of positive messages received. So he's still trying to have his cake and eat it. He's still trying to say, but just so you know, these Muslims are bad and the president is one of them. But then he says, I have zero ill will, disrespect or animosity toward the Muslim religion. Where would they get that? And then being a good, strong, God-loving Christian, I adhere to the teachings of the faith and respect all beliefs. I think that the most problematic sentence in this comes up in a moment. He said, like most, my daily existence evolves around the beliefs of God, family, and the Constitution. And he said that my reference to the president being a Muslim was a poor choice of words in a moment of anger. That's the one that kills me. My reference to the president being a Muslim was indeed a poor choice of words in a moment of anger. So what he's saying is, I was angry, and that's why I called him a Muslim. Because Muslim is evidently an epithet. Muslim is a curse word. I only called him Muslim because I was angry. The same way I might call you some other nasty bad word and then later say, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. I called you the F word or the this word or the that word, whatever. But I was angry. And then we say, all right, well, you lost your temper and you used that terrible word. Muslim's not a terrible word. What he's saying is that when he really gets pissed off and wants to hurt somebody, he'll call them a Muslim. But this was just a moment of anger. And you notice what he also doesn't do in this apology is he never walks back the notion that the president is Muslim. He shouldn't have to, in that being Muslim isn't bad or wrong. Being a terrorist is, and I think he's trying to tell you that he knows those aren't the same thing. So that's step one. But he's not walking back the notion that Barack Obama is Muslim. None of us knows what's in the president's heart, but he's famously Christian. You know, if you dissect Barack Obama's religious history, he's been to churches he wish he wasn't at, but he's never really been seen as a Muslim except for that funny sounding name. So this guy doesn't want to concede that point. My reference to the president being Muslim was a moment of anger. My fear is that we're being denigrated by all of Washington, D.C. But where is it in this thing that he says, as I understand it, the president is a Christian and it really doesn't matter what faith he is anyway? He doesn't say that. The Muslim communities across the world, he writes, do not embrace what is occurring by these terrorists. And yet a lot of what's previously stated in his apology infers that. This is the deepest pile of contradicting statements you've seen in an apology in a long time. I don't know this guy. I've not talked to him. I've not met him. I'm sorry for him that he's on WGN radio right now. And, you know, his trying to get his nice, quiet little life in Superior, Wisconsin back wasn't being told on the radio like this. But this is an example of a couple of things. You know, it's an example of what the president's been up against all these years. It's an example of how people actually do use the Muslim faith derogatorily and how we do have these sort of deep-rooted fears of Muslims. You know, that's transparent. And I'll even say that's okay. I think if we're honest about it and try to come to grips with how short-sighted that is, that's okay. We need to work through that. Wonder what your comments are on either his first statement, unbelievable, she and her Muslim partner have destroyed the fabric of democracy, and the apology itself, which may say more about him in this country than the first statement did. My number is 312-981-7200. Let's just have a conversation about this. 312-9... Oh, and by the way, so you know how I said that if you use the internet to punish, the internet will punish you. Here's where the punishment comes to this poor guy. I mean, like he says, recent days have brought considerable responses to my Facebook post regarding our president. The anger, pain, and extremely foul comments are duly noted. So that's just, you know, bad people on the internet just pounding this poor guy mercilessly. And here he thought he was going to score when he went after the Obamas, but now he's getting it back. And it's nobody, neither side deserves what they're getting. But then I went online myself. I've never done this before, but I was kind of a little fit of anger. I'm like, God, this is what we're up against in this country. We've got to do something about it. So what do? I'm sitting there in front of my laptop and I start clicking. And I, for the first time ever, hit send. Let me tell you who I sent what to in a minute. I'll take your calls as well. 312-981-7200. Happy afternoon to you. This is WGN. All right, let's see if we can take a couple of phone calls. I'm not sure that we can, but we'll give it a try. Guys, we start with line four. That's going to be Mike. You're on WGN. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I know this much. You simply cannot legislate morality. Whether someone hates a particular group or another, you cannot legislate that. And the government can't compel an individual to hate Muslims or not hate Muslims. You know, you talk about like hate speech. Well, unfortunately, that's protected by the Bill of Rights. The only time that's not is when you scream fire in a theater. That's the only kind of speech that is prohibited by everybody because of the potential for it to cause mass panic and whatnot. But just saying, hey, you're a Muslim and I hate you, I might be a jag off for saying that, but it's not for. But that's for me to decide. It's
no, you're right. If the question were, do you have the right to say that? I think the answer. I hope most of us would agree you do. I think the mistake is though, you cannot say that without thinking that there will be no consequences. You could lose your job for that, or you could lose the election for that, right?
Well, and that's ultimately it, is that there are consequences for your actions. You know, it's like if you operate a business and you decide that you're not going to serve that business or serve clientele that disagree with you because of their color, creed,
absolutely,
skin, et cetera.
Yeah.
Your consequence is you will be boycotted.
Yeah.
Now, that's not something that necessarily, again, should be forced
right.
By the government. That's a movement. That's social networking. That's solved.
I appreciate your call, Michael. Thanks for jumping in. I'm glad you were our first phone call, because you also remind me of the point that I wanted to make, and that is this. So when I read what this mayor in Wisconsin did, and then I saw his apology, and now I'm just getting ticked, I sent a letter to the Chamber of Commerce on their website where I had to give my name, my phone number, my email address. It's one of those forms you fill out. But I said something like this. It was real simple. I just said, you know, hey, Chamber of Commerce in Superior, Wisconsin, just so you know, I don't think many people are going to want to come from Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Chicago. I don't think people are going to come to your town and spend money when your mayor is saying things like that. And that's all I said. But I think that's kind of what this guy's talking about. Let the marketplace decide what the consequences will be. And if you are running a business in that town, and you know, people don't pay attention to that town, and all of a sudden you find out that the reason they're getting attention is because their mayor on Facebook is defending his calling out President Obama as a Muslim. Do you want to travel up there and spend money on vacation? Maybe not. Maybe not. We go next to Steve on line 3. You're on WGN. Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
Good. What do you want to say?
I live in a portion of Chicago. I've lived here in for 22 years, and they changed it. They changed it on the map. It's called Little India now, and it is predominantly Muslim. I'm like the only white Christian guy that lives in the neighborhood. Yeah. I get along with the Muslims fine. I run a building of 10 units that are all Muslims. They're friendly to me. I have no problems with them whatsoever. But one of my Muslim friends is a store owner. He told me that Obama was a Muslim, and I says, you're kidding. And he goes, look at this. And he showed me a photo on his cell phone that was evidently not retouched. He's standing next to a younger, his wife. I guess they were dating then. And he's in his full Muslim garb and his headdress and everything.
So what does that tell you?
That doesn't tell me anything. It doesn't matter to me what his religion is. The point is that he lies and he continues to lie and stands there and saying he's a Christian to the American people when
you have a picture of him wearing Muslim garb. Well, but
I
see
do.
Video of him going in and out of a church on Sundays a lot.
I know. Is that a sham or did he revert?
Well,
that's what confuses me. Did,
well,
did
I think you're confused.
He should say I was.
You know what
a
I think?
And now I'm a Christian.
So I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us. I here's the deal. You and I don't know what anybody's faith is. What building you go in or out of does not tell me what your religion is. What a photograph shows of what garb I'm wearing does not tell you what religion I am. My religion is really in my heart. It's who I'm praying to and what I'm praying and what I'm feeling, I guess. I mean, if you only judge the faith by the building they go in and out of and the services they attend, then Barack Obama's a Christian. But maybe you secretly know that he's a Muslim. And in fact, maybe he is. That, you know, not only is that not knowable, but that shouldn't matter, right? It shouldn't matter. So the fact that you have a photograph of him going in or out of either a mosque or a church or whatever, I don't think you can call him a liar. You know, it almost has to be a moot point because you really can't know. Well, the motto for 2016 will be, You use the internet to punish, and the internet will punish you. It's 120. It's about 129. So we'll pause. Rob will update you on the news. The Mincing Rascals took on a Chicago story. It's our weekly podcast. We dropped it this week on Wednesday, a roundtable with Eric Zorn and Kristen McQuarrie from the Chicago Tribune. Our own Steve Bertrand normally joins us, too. I'm trying to remember who all was in this mix. I think Bertrand was out. But it's an interesting conversation about what's going on in Chicago, and we'll feature that next on WGN. Sunny and 33, which is above freezing, as you know. All right, thank you, Rob. This is John Williams here until 3 on WGN Radio. Each week we record a segment called The Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast. You can subscribe to it. I hope you do. Get out your phone and make sure that in your podcast app you've got in there Mincing Rascals. Mincing Rascals is a weekly roundtable featuring Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, Kristen McQuarrie, who sometimes writes a column for the Tribune, but is one of the editorial writers. She's on their board, and our own Steve Bertrand. And I sit down and talk about some of the stories in the news. We'll pick up the Mincing Rascals with our conversation about 19-year-old Quintonio LeGrier, who was shot after he allegedly ran at the cops with a bat. Also shot behind him was a woman who wasn't involved at all but was an innocent bystander, a lady named Betty Jones. That's where we pick it up when Kristen McQuarrie says,
this was a college student who it's unclear whether he was having some sort of mental issues, but there is a really poignant story in today's Sun-Times that talks about how this was a kid who kind of beat the foster care system, went on to college, had such a promising future. And it just makes it all the more heartbreaking that he, you know, died in a shower of bullets.
Yeah, it's difficult to know exactly what happened here. The police account hasn't even been very thorough, right? We don't really know how they came to shoot Betty Jones. Was she standing next to him? Were they firing wildly and hit him? I mean, we haven't had that conversation. We also don't know what the police knew. There's been a lot of criticism about the police not handling correctly a mental health disturbance, which is what this may have been. But what we know about the 911 calls so far is that the police who were asked to respond to the scene weren't told that it was a mental health issue. They just heard it was a guy with a bat threatening people. If, in fact, he is threatening a police officer with a bat and he's close to the officer is entitled to fire. I mean, that is a baseball bat is deadly force. And exactly where Betty Jones was and how irresponsible the officer was, we don't really know yet. I'm just tempted to reserve judgment. You're right, Kristen. We don't even know what the police version is, and we have no reason, really, given all the things that have happened in the last year, to trust the police version.
Yeah, right.
But
right,
this is
right.
One. This is one where I just want to know more before I decide to set my outrage meter. I was shocked when I heard this story. I was like, "What?"
Well, I was shocked how quickly it happened. I would just think, God, if the cops would ever be reserved in their judgment about using their guns, it would be now, and we weren't there. And this doesn't matter either, but he did have a rap sheet, right? He had an instance where he punched a girl on campus at Northern Illinois University in the chest. He had incidents where he was stealing items from stores. There was half a dozen or more counts on his record in Chicago and in DeKalb. So so he's not a perfect maybe citizen. Not that that maybe matters, but I guess it is reasonable based on that to suspect that he was acting violently, that he was coming after the police. He had a violent past. And I don't know what his mental health was. His father was one of the people that called to say, I'm fearful for my life. My son's banging on the door with a baseball
bat.
But
he didn't say he's got mental health issues. And it's not clear that he did have mental health issues, right?
But, you know, the idea that a baseball bat is a deadly weapon, I guess it is. But I wish the police, when they start to retrain them, would begin to entertain the idea of, oh, my God, we told that man to stop. He won't stop. He's running at us with a baseball bat. You have a lot of options there. Like, you run away or back off, retreat quickly. Or you could say, no, a baseball bat's a deadly weapon, and he came at us. He disobeyed our order. We all should obey the cops. Therefore, we get to shoot him dead? You know, that to me should be the very last option under consideration. And yet, it seems to be the option for police these days. That really needs to change.
Well, the mayor is actually having a press conference where he's going to talk a little bit about how they are going to, like you said, retrain police so that they learn to de-escalate situations instead of escalate them when they show up on the scene. So he's going to talk about that. He's going to talk about how they want every officer to be equipped and trained with tasers by next summer. Again, I'm just, you know, is this enough for what is, you know, a systemic and probably cultural problem in the department? I don't know. But I do think in this case, this man, I guess, teenager, his behavior, from what we know, leading up until the point that he went away to school, was pretty calm and peaceful. So I think it does point to him having some sort of bipolar issues or mental health issues, that he started acting so erratically once he got to school. And you're right. He has, I don't know yet that he had a rap sheet in Chicago, but he did in DeKalb.
In DeKalb. Well, suppose, I mean, I'm less impressed with the urgency of his mental health. I mean, maybe that made him erratic, but I still think if in fact his intent was to club the baseball bat on, you know, to club the police officer with the baseball bat, rational or otherwise, there's got to be a better way to take down a 19-year-old man with a baseball bat than with deadly force with a gun.
I mean, John, you know, I'm quick to criticize myself also in these situations, but if they're in a narrow staircase or something, if their mode of retreat is somehow blocked, I mean, we just don't know. I don't have a picture in my mind's eye. I kind of think that if the innocent bystander hadn't been shot, that this would not be quite as big a story. That's what really gives me questions. Okay, so you're going to fire. If you're going to use deadly force, be precise about it. For goodness sake, don't just fire your gun wildly and hit some poor woman who answered the door. So, yeah.
I've been saying this since Ferguson, too, that the business of doing the work that we ask the police to do, remember, the calls came from within the house. He may have placed one of the calls himself. I mean, this is, the business of doing police work is not pretty and can be, in fact, violent work. Sometimes you do have to punch and kick and wrestle and shoot people. That's what we ask the police to do. And here were the cops coming to the aid of 911 calls from the black community. They were asked to intervene in this situation. So I want to be very sympathetic to how difficult their job is and how awful it will look to the rest of us when we're watching it detached. But so that's my giant caveat to I think the police are arriving on the scene with sort of a predetermined way to handle this. And I think they almost would regard strategic retreat as a compromise, as a surrender. They don't want to do that. They want to, you know, we told you to do this. And when they don't, they get ticked. It just seems like the adrenaline's flowing. These guys are angry. I'm talking about the police now. And they resent that these people aren't obeying their orders. Which, by the way, if you ask a talk show audience, what should we do? They all say, well, when I get pulled over, I do exactly what the police say. And so people just don't understand anybody that would go at the cops. And the cops don't like it either. And so the next thing you know, they're using their weapons in instances where I wasn't there either, Eric. I want to believe is often not necessary. Whew. So that's a long statement, but I think that's where we are right now.
I mean, it sounds like this case unfolded so quickly. The woman who was accidentally shot was opening the door for police. She was trying to, you know, help her upstairs neighbor, and she's opening the door, and they are shooting in the doorway. Yeah. I don't want to just over speculate, but if in fact this kid was charging at police and did have a baseball bat and was going through emotional problems, you know, there is this thing called death by suicide, where you actually try to get the police to shoot at you, and there are some, I don't know, that sounds like it could be it.
Well, are you guys surprised that Jason Van Dyke, the police officer charged with shooting Laquan McDonald, is pleading not guilty? Is that the way these things go? Because it sure looks like he's guilty to me.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. He's a murder one charge is going to be hard to uphold against him anyway. I don't know that a plea is in the cards. I think it's very hard to convict police officers, even in this case, even when there's video. So I think we're looking at a long trial ahead.
And even if a plea bargain was in the cards, a not guilty plea is the opening gambit anyway. I mean, it's very, very rare for someone to come and plead guilty. I mean, we saw it last year with Barbara Bird Bennett, right? She kind of came and threw herself on the mercy of the court. And also Hastert pleaded guilty pretty quickly, too. But even at first, I think Hastert pleaded not guilty. So there's, you know, it's not at all surprising that he did that.
Well, I worry for the city, Eric, if there isn't a conviction of a serious charge against Jason Van Dyke in this case. His attorney said the video's two-dimensional. You don't see everything that happened. There's another side to the story. He did feel genuinely threatened. Maybe that's just posturing in his part, but I thought, man, if they get this wrong, if this guy is not convicted of some serious offense, that's just going to put fuel on that fire.
Oh, yeah.
Feels Rodney King-like.
Krista McQuarrie with the last comment there from our Mincing Rascals podcast. As I listen back to that, I'm reminded that I need to stop walking around while we're doing the podcast. Wow. Sorry about that. But there is part of what you can hear in its entirety. There was three other subjects that we tackled more briefly, and you can catch it all on my Facebook page. On Facebook, I'm King John, and you can subscribe to the Mincing Rascals and catch it each week that way as well. Incidentally, over Christmas, did anybody in your family get or give one of those hoverboards? I was looking at a list of the top gadgets of 2015, and the hoverboard or the hoverboard-like products were number two on the list. Number one is interesting, and I'll get to that after the news at the top of the hour. But I'm wondering if you or anybody in your family got or gave one of the hoverboards, and how is that working out? Is a lot of fun, or has it been nothing but fiery mayhem? My niece got one of those, and I was over at her house over the holidays, and she was zipping around the house on that, and it was really spectacular. I haven't seen her fall. I think she's fine even as I speak. The technology in that thing is amazing. Watching her, I sort of felt the way I did when I first rode a Segway. You think, wow, look what we've done here. I'm interested in what the status of those things are in the homes throughout Chicagoland. This is John Williams. My number is 312-981-7200. And this is WGN. WGN Radio News in about 9 minutes. Rob Hart will do that at the top of the hour. This is John Williams. Still to come, our Vibe Score segment. We'll see how you've been scoring the news and a list of lists plus my own. That's all coming up in the next hour. I should have known that all of the calls would be about the podcast and about what the police are doing and the rest of us, as opposed to hoverboards. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. But let's pick up some of these phone calls in the meantime. So we'll start with, I think I can actually do this one, Krista. Let me see if this works. We'll go to John. You're on the air. Hi, John. You're on WGN.
Yes, a 19-year-old kid swinging a baseball bat indoors is hardly a rational situation. So what we perceive and the parents perceived was not a tranquil situation that one would like to find themselves in.
You're talking about the police having to intervene in that sort of a scene?
Yes. Why did the parents have to call the police?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer to that, but the kid was pounding on the door with a baseball bat. One version of the story is that the father called and that the cops showed up. That scenario to me is not so crazy. You know what? And you know, this is the other thing. I think I should probably reiterate, because I was critical of the cops a moment ago, how much I appreciate them, how I believe the police are the good guys. We're always micromanaging and Monday morning quarterbacking how they do. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but at the end of the day, the cops are going into places you and I don't want to go to do work that we don't want to do. Thank God for the cops. And in fact, these are the people that called them and said, hey, we need help here with this person. John, thanks for the call. Let's go to a Frank on line four. The number's 312-981-7200. Hi, Frank. You're on the air. What can I do for you?
Okay, well, I'm a retired policeman, and in the late 60s and early 70s, we had shotguns in the car, and then they were being stolen out of the car while the officers were up in a project or up on the second or third floor, rendering aid or breaking up a disturbance, and the shotguns were stolen. So, and then Rahm comes out now, the mayor, and says that at first he says all coppers are going to have stun guns. Yeah. Then he reiterates and says, I'm going to put them in every car. Well, he should do is, you know, do a little backward work and ask the policemen that were there back in the day when the policemen were getting, more coppers were getting killed in the late 60s and 70s. And
well, I don't know what stun guns were like back then, but don't you wish that I was amazed that they all don't have them. How do the cops? I can go buy a version of a stun gun right now. Right. I could get one online. How is it that the police don't have stun guns?
Well, you have to after the person is taken down, you have to remove those electrodes from his body, and you have to be trained in that. That's why some of the officers, from what I understand, are reluctant to do that.
You mean they don't want to physically interact with the person after they've stunned them?
Right, because that calls for a medical thing. So they want to call paramedics.
Well, bullet holes call for medical things, too. I mean, really, thanks for the call.
How about rubber bullets?
Anything. If rubber bullets do the job, that's fine. But it just seems to me like the technology is in a place where there ought to be some options there. And a stun – maybe this was a case for a stun gun. Maybe it wasn't. But I'm just amazed that they don't all have them and that they aren't all trained with them. That's all.
He can't man – that's 11,000, just as a rough figure, 11,000 stun guns. Where's he going to get the money? The city's supposed to be broke. I mean,
well, they're getting body. You know, I don't know the answer to that, but I'll tell it. Thank you for the call, Frank. But I think body cams and stun guns should be part of the arsenal. Lord, if ever a city needed those two things, this one is it. Who's next, guys? We got time for a couple more phone calls here. Jerry on line one. You're on WGN Radio. Let me go over. Put him on the air here with that. Hey, Jerry, this is John. You're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi. Well, here's what I've heard, that when you're getting trained to receive a stun gun, you yourself must be stunned.
Ooh, really?
And a police officer cannot be forced to be stunned. Therefore, if they say, I do not want to be stunned, this is what I heard on the air. It might have been on WGN.
Yeah.
And it would allow the person, the policeman, to know what it feels like.
Yeah, I understand that. But, I mean, we give them guns with real bullets. We're not saying you've got to be shot. When I get to be king, that rule will change.
Well, they may be changing it now so that all the policemen get stun guns. But apparently only 21% of policemen have stun guns because they say, I don't want to be stunned, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you telling us that. If that's the case, that sounds like a silly rule to me. I don't want them to use the stun guns indiscriminately either, but come on. Let's go to Tony on line three. Tony, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
This is the question that I have. Everyone keeps talking about these stun guns. You got to go through training. You have to be stunned yourself. You know, the police already have guns that they know how to use. They're trained to use them. Well, why don't they have guns with the rubber bullets? Wouldn't that take somebody down that needed to be taken down, you know, if they weren't an immediate threat? I mean, don't those work?
My guess is they do. In fact, thanks for the phone call. I'm going to take one more call on this. You know, here's the problem, though. There are times where you really do need a real bullet, you know, a lethal bullet in your gun, and you can't be changing them out. If I'm a cop and I'm going to a domestic disturbance call, I definitely want the real bullets in my gun, not the rubber ones. So I'm not exactly sure how we manage all these things, but I just thought they'd have on their clip, all of them, on their belt, a taser. And they would be able to use that in those instances where they felt it was necessary. And a kid coming at you with a baseball bat sure sounds like taser time to me. Incidentally, Patrick, I've got time for you as my last call, and I'm glad you joined us. You're on WGN on line five. Oh, shoot. Did we just hang up on him? Are you there, Patrick? Hello? He hung up on himself. Patrick says that his understanding is you do not have to be tased. I hope that's the case because that sounds like a pretty ridiculous rule. A couple of you have said, that's not the way it goes. We're going to go do WGN Radio News with Rob Hart. That's coming up next. 'Cause baby, now we got bad. By the way, Rob, this Taylor Swift song was judged by Time magazine to be the best pop music video of the year. I don't know how much time you spend watching music videos, but this really was a good video. Do you agree with me on that?
I would agree with that. And Taylor Swift with red hair, that's a look. I like
it. Wait a minute. Was that the color of her hair in that video?
Yeah. Or? Yeah. No, that was, it was, she was dead. I liked it. I'm a fan.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember now because I'm seeing the scenes in my head. I guess I need to think of what color her hair is. It was red in that. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Good. Nice catch there, Rob.
I was very observant. I was looking really hard.
Well, you know how at the end of every year, now the start of the year, I guess this would be the last moment anybody will talk about this on the radio, but everybody does their lists of everything. Time magazine had their list of lists. Let me just run a few of them by you without going deep into all of them. The best movie of the year, Time magazine said, was Spotlight. I didn't see as many movies as maybe you or surely our producer Griffin did, but that was the best movie I saw. Top 10 worst movies of the year, they included Vacation, Thank You, Jupiter Ascending, Aloha, A Walk in the Woods, though they said the worst movie of the year was Fantastic Four. Top 10 movie performances, that's an interesting idea. One movie had two entries, Paul Dano's performance in Love and Mercy, you know, the Brian Wilson Beach Boys biopic of sorts, and Elizabeth Banks, who played Brian Wilson's wife in that movie. Dano and Banks both in the top 10 for their performances. The cast of Spotlight was mentioned, I think, at number 2. Yeah, number 2 was the cast of Spotlight, giving one of the best movie performances. But the overall best movie performance of the year, they said, was Blythe Danner in I'll See You in My Dreams. Top 10 TV shows. Number 5, Mr. Robot. Loved that show this year. Number 4, Fargo. Much better this year than the previous season. Inside Amy Schumer, number 3. Mad Men, number 2. They said, Time magazine, the best show this year was Veep. I don't know if you watch that, Rob. Are you still listening and watching Veep these days?
Well, I that's one of those shows I want to start binge watching because you talk to enough or read enough social media content from Washington insiders and political reporters, and one person said it best that everybody in D.C. thinks they're Francis Underwood from House of Cards, but in reality they're Buster Bluth from Veep. But that show is actually a documentary about what Washington is really like.
It is one of those shows that's a little too painful for me to watch. You know what I mean? The characters are so mean and so pompous. Take whatever the bad adjective is. They are so that I almost can't enjoy it. So when I watch it, I go, oh, God, she's good. Oh, God, that's brutal. Oh, God. And then I find myself saying, oh, God, a lot instead of, of actually enjoying the show.
It's supposed to make me laugh, but
yeah.
I can't turn away.
Top episode of TV by any show, just the top moment, if you will, of television, the top single episode of anything on TV this year was Stephen Colbert's interview with Joe Biden. Folks sure did talk about that a lot. You felt the vice president's pain. Colbert handled it pretty well. He's not a great interviewer in my estimation, but I think Colbert had the right guest at the right time, that's for sure. And Biden explained why he wasn't going to run.
That was also a big moment for his show. It had just premiered,
and I think was that like the first week or so?
That was the first week, and he a lot of people thought he punted that interview with Jeb Bush for the very first episode, and it was I thought the show was going fine, but the interviews were the low point at first for sure, and that one I think helped him got him a lot of good press to roll with.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where this is not the time to dig or press, right? And Colbert can certainly be a nice, sensitive guy, and Biden sure needed a hand that day. Remarkable TV. They said it was the best episode of TV this past year. They moved on to music. This is Time magazine's list of lists. The best songs of the year. Adele's When We Were Young was number 4. Number 1 is Flesh Without Blood by Grimes. I'm saying those words for the first time in my life. What is that?
Grimes is a electronic pop female performer. She's a singer. Her name is Grimes.
I see.
One person.
Or Grimey, as her friends call her.
That's not... I can't confirm that.
Is it okay that I just say this? I get a little, I don't know, that's not my music anymore, right? But it's a little complicated for those of us who don't follow certain genres of music when we can't tell if the name of the band is a person or is a group. So, like, Grimes looks like, who's in Grimes? Like, who's the lead guitarist for Grimes? But that's not correct, Griffin. Grimes is the name. Is that right?
That's right. I wish I had a violin to play for you here. I'm very sorry.
But that's fine, though. I mean, you get to a certain age, and I'm starting to reach that point, too, where it's just simply not your music. It belongs right to somebody else, and you just look bad trying to appear hip.
Exactly, exactly.
It's like Tom Snyder, who hit the first appearance of U2 on American TV was on The Tomorrow Show. And you would think that Tom Snyder would get points for being this forward-looking musical guy, except right, he kept calling them the U2 the entire time, which was completely in character for him.
Well, Rolly Keith was the big-time TV entertainer in Peoria, Illinois, when I was down there, and he was up on stage at the Peoria County Fair, and he was introducing this band, and he said, and here they are, Rio Speedwagon.
And Kevin Cronin just rolled with it, I would imagine.
And I just felt so bad for America at that moment. It was, and Rolly's a great guy, was.
So you're not alone.
Yeah, so right.
It comes around every you know, generation, I guess. But, what are you going to do?
Well, that's it. And that's what Rob says is so true. Don't pretend to know the music you don't know. And it's a trap I fall into too often. The top 10 worst songs, I suppose everybody's got nominees for this. They said the worst was Robin Williams by CeeLo Green. Was that some sort of tribute song he did to Robin Williams?
Honestly,
something about Robin Williams?
I should have looked into it. I don't know. But that's what happens with a worst music list is, like, if it was that bad, you probably didn't hear it.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to movies.
I'll be forgiven for not knowing this, yeah.
Movies can be bad, and they'll get a wide release because that's how Hollywood churns them out. But I feel like, yeah, if the song is truly, truly terrible, yeah, you'll read it and think, okay, I didn't even know that existed.
Well, that's why I mentioned more in that category, worst movies, because they do get promoted, and some of them have big stars. A Walk in the Woods was a major release. Everybody that I heard that saw that didn't like it, and they said it was terrible. Aloha, big stars, terrible movie.
That was my worst of the year.
That was the worst one? You didn't see Vacation, though, the remake, did
you? No, that's true. Critics know better what's going to be worse because they get paid to see everything. But I went to Aloha, thought it would be a good movie, and it's by Cameron Crowe, who's made some of my all-time favorites. Jerry Maguire, Almost Famous, Say Anything, classic movies, and it was a big, big swing and a miss.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's hard to watch.
Top 10 best albums, Wild Heart by Miguel. See my conversation about top 10 best songs, but okay, Wild Heart by Miguel. Congratulations to you, Miguel, or your band. Top 10, do you have anything to add to that, Griffin? Wild Heart by Miguel?
Well, this one should be a little easier. His name is Miguel, which is just a guy's name.
Okay, I don't think know. I made my point twice now.
You're really... Now you've gone too far with that one. It's Miguel. He's an R&B singer.
Well, just so he knows, he's misspelling the name then, I think. I don't know. Maybe that is how you spell Miguel.
M-I-G-U-E-L. I think you might be dead wrong on this one.
Yeah, okay. Fine. Top 10 best pop music videos. That's where Taylor Swift's Bad Blood came in. Top 10 best fiction. The Story of the Last Child by, I think it's Elena Ferrante. Top 10 nonfiction books. Number 3 on the list is Negroland by Margot Jefferson. There's a Chicago connection to that one. The best work of nonfiction, Time magazine this week said, is H is for Hawk by Helen MacDonald. Plays or musicals? You know what they're going to say is number 1, so they made it number 2. Plays or musicals this past year? Hamilton, they said, was the second best. King Charles III, they said, was brilliant political satire. It's a play I haven't seen and don't know much about. So that's your 2 and your 1.
That reminds me of a list that I saw about a week ago by a TV critic named Todd Vanderwerf. And he gave his top 10 best TV shows of 2015. And he said, number 1, slightly out there but ultimately non-controversial pick. Number 2, your actual number 1. number three, the old war horse that had a good season, and he goes on. But it's a very political process, picking in the top five or ten.
Well, now that you mention it, so you look at the top ten TV shows, Mad Men is in there, Veep, and maybe they deserve to be there, but you can see some of those considerations coming into play. Mr. Robot, Fargo, Inside Amy Schumer, Mad Men, Veep, all undeniably good shows, but you imagine some of those thoughts went into the making of the list. But I also think they always, always, always throw something in there just to get you talking. So, of course, they're not going to make Hamilton number one. And if they make something else number one, then everybody's talking about that list. So that's how you generate buzz. Top 10 apps, according to Time Magazine. Apps, number five, they said, is Clean, C-L-E-E-N, which lets you swipe away photos that you don't want, just like Tinder. You install this app, access all your photos, and then you just swipe left, right, left, right, left, right to keep the photos you want or don't. It's much quicker. Number four is Periscope, the live streaming app, which I think is fantastic. I have not used it yet, but what a brilliant idea. Number three, the Starbucks mobile ordering app. Number two, Snapchat, which is, you know, Snapchat. And then number one is HBO Now, where you access their platform on your mobile device. Top 10 new species. Yeah, science is still discovering new species. Number two is a frog so perfect and green, they've called it Kermit the Frog. It looks exactly like a skinny Kermit the Frog. It's adorable that way. And number one is Homo naledi, which is a new human-related species that lived millions of years ago. It's not us. It's something close to us. And they discovered that this year. Where was I when they uncovered the bones of Homo naledi? That's one of the top 10. In fact, that is the number one new species, according to Time Magazine. What's the matter, Griff?
It seems weird to rank species. I do feel like the frog got
The frog should be number one because the frog is still with us.
The frog's hearing this right now, like, come on.
Wait a second, what do I got to do to become the number?
You got to be extinct.
The bad news is next year, the frog is not on the list anymore. It rolls off the list of eligibility.
Yeah, no
kidding. It's like Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame.
He's like, have you seen my green? It's very green.
I know. He's done it all. He's done everything right, and then this moment came, and there was Hamilton in front of him or something. You know, it's just, damn it. It's 2:19. Let me pause, and we'll get to top things that broke the internet, top toys, gadgets, and selfies. And then my so there's also an app. Tell me if I'm right about this, Griffin. There's an app for lists, right, where you communicate with your friends, not via Twitter, not like on Facebook, but you simply share and follow people's lists, right?
It's called the List app. It's free. I just got it. And it's kind of like Twitter. You scroll through and people share things. But instead of sharing tweets, they share lists and make a list of whatever you want.
Okay.
It's kind of cool.
But nobody's then posting just on that app, hey, long live Natalie Cole, she had a great run. They would then have to, that wouldn't be a...
No, you might do your top five Natalie Cole songs.
Right. And is it five or ten? Does it matter what the
number
is?
Yeah, you do whatever you want.
One last thing, is there a word count limit on the items in the list?
No, I don't think so, no, because some of them run pretty long.
Yeah, okay, because I made my own. I'm very excited to share this with you.
All right.
Plus the latest from Time. In a minute on WGN. Okay, last of those lists, we're just looking at some of the things Time Magazine did, and theirs was a little different than others. For instance, they said the top space moments included number three, New Horizons makes its closest fly by Pluto. I remember that and thought it was pretty swell. Number one is a guy named Scott Kelly and Misha Korenenko are going to begin a one-year trip in space. They're getting ready to see what happens if we send people to Mars. So that's the number one space moment. Two of them in a capsule in a space station for a year. Things that broke the internet, number seven this year, was Caitlyn Jenner coming out as transgender in Vanity Fair. It's an internet moment because folks first got a chance to see online, and then eventually the print issue came out. I'm not proud of this, but I began subscribing to Vanity Fair this year to get that article. just because I had to see. Top toys of the year, number two, Hello Barbie. Number one, BB-8, the droid, that Star Wars-like robot toy it looks like. That's number one, toy of the year. Gadgets, number two is the hoverboard. Griffin, did you see the hoverboard at Aunt Mary's house this year?
No, I wasn't there, but I know that
it's... Holy cow. Holy cow.
I'm not the first person to say this, but they don't hover. It's not... they're on the ground.
Yeah, it's misleading.
I hate it so much. I don't know why. I can't get that out of my head. Every time somebody says hoverboard, it does not hover.
Boy, guys, that's not the first time I've heard that, but I've never understood that critique. Of course it doesn't hover.
Well,
it's got to have wheels.
2016. I mean, soon we will have real hoverboards.
When you first heard of hoverboard, you thought, wow, they've got a little magnetic field under there. It's got a battery. I guess that could happen, right?
Sure, we're not far away.
Trains do it, so, yeah, that's not happening there. They say they catch fire. They also say they're really fun. Have you noticed that in all of the videos that are posted of hoverboards where people are falling down? Matt Bubala was talking about this over Christmas. I think he was doing Cochrane's show one day, and he was talking about how people fall down and they bash their heads and, you know, how dangerous they are. Have you noticed how all of the videos of people falling on hoverboards are middle-aged guys or guys? There's no females falling off of hoverboards. This is very much a thing. Guys go, hey, I can do this. And they get on and they can't.
Mike Tyson had a notable falling off the hoverboard video, which was the least surprising thing I've seen all year. As soon as I saw him step on a hoverboard, I'm thinking, I'm pretty sure this isn't going to end great.
And then when they modified the kid from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out so it looked like he actually knocked him off the hoverboard, that really was the icing on the cake.
I hope they don't get sued. Was it Cameron Crowe who was ticked that he couldn't bring his hoverboard on a flight and was all upset about that? He was. I don't remember what airline he was flying on, but his son wanted to bring the hoverboard with him. And I thought the memo pretty much got out there that you can't bring hoverboards on airplanes because some of them are fire hazards. He was all ticked about that. And I suppose somebody's going to fall, crack their head, and they're going to sue that company. But I think that's just really fun technology.
Oh, I think it was Russell Crowe, but either way.
Yeah, I said Cameron, didn't I?
Doesn't matter.
Proud of myself that I got one of those two right, Russell Crowe. The top selfies, the number one gadget of the year is the Microsoft HoloLens, or HoloLens, H-O-L-O-L-E-N-S. It's that, you know, device you put on your head and you now seem to be in a room fighting monsters or whatever. They say there's a number of applications for it. Surgeons could be trained in that virtual world that these hoods create or these lenses. And finally, selfies of the year, number three, Kim, Kanye, and Hillary. Number two, just a sexy picture of Kim Kardashian showing her assets, promoting her book Selfish. And the number one selfie of the year was a picture of three young women at a St. Louis Cardinal game. And they spent a lot of time taking selfies, obviously, of themselves. But there they all are for the whole game, just taking more and more pictures of themselves together. The announcers ripped on them for much of the game. The Cardinals then got a lot of backlash and offered tickets to the girls for an upcoming game, and they declined. Top selfies of the year. The news is coming up on WGN. Rob, we'll get to this in a minute. I'll also ask the guys from the beat when they come in to talk sports with us. But on a scale of 1 to 100, how much do you trust Peyton Manning? 100 would be he's trustworthy. 0 would be he's not. How much do you trust Peyton Manning when he said he's never used performance-enhancing drugs?
I'm going to go 50-50 on that, and even if he did use the HGH to recover from his neck injury, whose performance was being enhanced? Because there were a lot of mediocre athletes on that list who are still mediocre after juicing, allegedly.
Oh, no kidding. Really? You're saying that for some of them it didn't matter, it didn't work or help anyway?
Right. It didn't turn back the hands of time for Ryan Howard, for example, because he was one of the players on that list. So I think you're either good regardless of whatever chemicals you're putting into your body. And the science of athletic training has advanced to such a point that in the case of Peyton Manning, what is the difference between a banned substance and an okay substance?
Well, especially when you consider how he was allegedly using it. He wasn't using it to jump higher or throw the ball farther. I think he was, my understanding was, he was recovering from that neck operation. And if anybody operates on my neck, I'm using steroids. You know, I mean, really, if that's going to help me recover from neck surgery, I don't know that that's necessarily going to enhance my performance on the field. I think it should be allowed to help you recover from neck surgery.
And if unless people believe that he should have naturally gone into that good night. And in that case, what's the difference between using HGH to recover from surgery and the ARP machine, the electronic stimulation machine that Cutler used to recover quickly from his groin injury a couple of years ago?
It's all so that's an interesting point, isn't it? One you inject, the other you don't. But either way, it's not your body's natural ability to heal and to perform. You know, I get burned on this all the time, though. I mean, I was a Lance Armstrong believer, and I guess I bet wrong on that one. So every time I seem to throw in with somebody because I'm a fan or because they seem credible, I get it wrong. I still think Bill Cosby's okay, for instance. So I'm a very bad predictor of. Okay, that was a joke. I'm a very bad predictor, though, of the guilt or innocence of some people.
Just wait until the trial. I mean, he's still in a court of law. He's okay.
Bill Cosby,
right?
Yeah, right.
Legally, he's okay.
I sure he is. Yeah, actually, you're absolutely right about that. He's still walking free. He and his wife still live a free life here in America. By the way, speaking of, so that's in our Vibe Score segment. Before we get to that, you know how I was sharing with you Time Magazine's list of lists? They had all their top favorite movies and music. They even had their favorite species of the year. But then we segued from that into that discussion of the new app called, you got to help me with this again, Griff. It's called The List or The List App or something like that.
The List App.
The List App, which would be a good name for a list app where you share lists of things. So I'm going to get that, and I'm going to post on there my top 10 fun facts from Bill Bryson's Short History of Nearly Everything. It's a nonfiction popular science book. Here are my top 10 favorite facts gleaned from Bill Bryson's Short History of Nearly Everything. Number one, on a diagram of the solar system, with Earth reduced to the size of a pea, Jupiter would still be over 1,000 feet away, and Pluto would be 1.5 miles distant. How much fun is that, huh? That's just one of them right there. Okay, I'll give you another. Under Drake's equation, the number of advanced civilizations in just our Milky Way alone always works out to be somewhere in the millions. The point is, we have so many stars, and that's just our Milky Way. Can you imagine all of the other solar systems and all of the other galaxies and all of the universe? They say if you just focus on the Milky Way, of which we are a resident, there's almost certainly 1 million advanced civilizations there. Number three, the average distance between any of these two civilizations is generally reckoned to be at least 200 light years, meaning that if these beings are somehow on another planet able to see us in their telescopes, they're watching light that left Earth 200 years ago. They're watching Thomas Jefferson, not you and me. They're seeing people who don't even know what an atom is. Speaking of atoms, he says, atoms are above all tiny. More than anything else, you should know that. 500,000 of them lined up shoulder to shoulder could hide under a human hair. On the smallness of atoms, he says, start with a paramecium and try to see one in a drop of water. You can't. To do so, you would need to enlarge that drop of water and everything accordingly in it to at least 40 feet across. But to see an atom, the drop would need to be stretched to 15 miles. About 4.5 billion years ago, Bill Bryson said, an object the size of Mars crashed into Earth, blowing out enough material to form our moon. Did you know that? Here's another fun fact from Short History of Nearly Everything. Earth is 4.5 billion years old. We have emerged only recently, human beings. If the Earth's existence were compressed into a 24-hour day, the whole of recorded human history would last no more than the last 3 seconds. 99% of all species that have ever existed are now extinct. That may be my favorite fun fact, because every time a spotted owl dies, and we go, oh, my God, we don't have any more rhinoceroses or whatever. And that's terrible. We should do everything we can to save them. Remember that 99.99% of all species that ever existed now do not. Along those lines, he said, once they got going, mammals grew big and fast on planet Earth. He says, to an almost preposterous degree, for a time, there were guinea pigs the size of rhinoceroses and rhinos the size of two-story homes. Raccoons migrated from North America to South America and grew to the size and ferocity of bears. Can you imagine you open up a garbage can and there's a bear-sized raccoon there? They once roamed the Earth. For years, a giant flightless bird called Titanus became perhaps the most ferocious creature to ever roam North America. It stood over 10 feet high, weighed 800 pounds, and had a beak that could tear the head off of anything that came near it. My top eight favorite facts from Bill. Is that too wordy, Griffin, to make the list? On that app of yours?
No, I think you could make that happen. I think there were maybe a few more facts than eight there. You really crammed in, I don't know if eight, that's really top 45. Fair enough, though.
All right, it's 2:43 on WGN. Let's do our segment that we call the Vibe Score. Oh, baby, what you got for me? What you're listening to there is obviously Aretha Franklin covering Carole King's You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. And that was a performance that you can watch if you download, well, a number of ways, but surely one way to watch it is to download the Vibe Score app. Make sure that you get the Vibe Score app. Vibe Score is one word. It's an app that I created with my cousin Tommy Hegberg. And we let you score things that are in the news. We like to see how things are doing out there. So we posted the video of Aretha at the Kennedy Center Honors, and folks loved that video. It's scoring a near all-time high, in fact, on Vibe Score, 93. It really is solid. It's really fun. And Carole King is watching it from the sidelines there. And she's in tears. She's got her hands to her heart. She just can't believe what she's seeing. It's so awesome. In fact, I think the Obamas were there crying at this performance. It was really something to see.
Barack, yeah, wiped. It looked like he was wiping away a tear. Maybe I'm projecting. But they were definitely moved. That was the most fun thing to watch them respond to it.
This is interesting. We asked you, do you trust Peyton Manning? You know, that story that we were talking about with Rob is an Al Jazeera report, which has been discredited since. But at the time, the question was, well, how much do you trust now Peyton Manning when he says, I didn't use PEDs? And he's getting a 77, which is a very high number. I scored him at an 85 because I like to get my heart broken. What did you score that one, Griff?
Well, Rob said he was 50-50. I went with 45 because it's like you say, every time you come out and support one of these guys, you're wrong. And it's almost nothing against Peyton Manning, but I just feel like if someone said he might have done it. I know this is not a great way to go through life, but I kind of feel like, yeah, I would believe it if it was true.
Well, none of us can be. You're right. So while I'm saying that, if you told me, no, guess what he did, I guess I wouldn't be as shocked as I once was. But yeah, I'm still optimistically cheering that notion on. Quentin Tarantino's Hateful Eight movie is out. I've heard some people say it's the worst movie they've ever seen, but more often than not, I'm reading good reviews for Hateful Eight. We asked you to tell us, what did you think of Quentin Tarantino's movies in general? He's maybe an acquired taste for some people. I don't know how you don't give Quentin Tarantino a 90. That's what I gave him. 64. Is what his body of work is getting. Where'd you check in, Griff?
I said 75, I think. I'm a fan. The last few have lost me a little bit. I I do think he's undeniably talented. I saw Hateful Eight last night. And
what do you give that?
It was very long, and it was good. But it was not, you know, Pulp Fiction and a couple
Reservoir
others.
Dogs.
Yeah, they're just absolute classics. This one is pretty good, I thought.
If on TV right now, Inglourious Basterds were on, and I was clicking through, I would not stop watching Inglourious
Basterds. That's actually probably my favorite of his. Unbelievable. So,
we asked you how your year was on Vibe Score. We just said 1 to 100. How was your year? I gave it an 85. My friend Kathy said 90. I had no idea she was having such a good year. I commented back to her, and I said, Kathy, I'm so happy for you. I didn't know. What was your year, Griff? 1 to 100.
How did she take that? She's like, what did you expect?
I don't know.
No, I'm done.
Really, you think that could be interpreted as a negative comment?
I don't know. I'm just talking here. That's what we're here to do. I think I went high too. I went 79 or something like that. The average score is 85. I'm glad to hear that our users had a good 2015.
Rob, 1 to 100. What would you say your year was? 100 is the best year you've ever had.
I'd give it a 45, but that's only because I lost my full time job at the rock and roll station. Because when you think of rock and roll, you think of me. And but I did get the opportunity since then to do a great deal of traveling with my family and the opportunities to bond with my daughter and to come back here and see everybody again. So. It wasn't that bad. But
I got to tell you, when I heard your voice back on this station, I was so happy. And I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know, is he full-time or part-time or what's happening? But I've been a fan of you and your work since you started. And I'm really glad you're on GN right now, I'll tell you that.
We started together 10 years ago. So if you were a time traveler from 2005, you would have thought nothing had changed.
Welcome back, Rob Hart.
Welcome back, John. Thank you.
Celebrities. Under the category of celebrities, we posted the picture of the Kardashian family Christmas card this year. I've never been more disappointed in the Kardashians. Why do we have Kardashians? So they can be fabulous and awesome and make you insane. And the picture is just one of their kids. They could be your kids or mine. They're wearing their nice clothes. They all aren't looking at the camera at the same time because kids don't. It looks like something you would get from your friends in Peoria. These are the Kardashians. I want them posed. I want them in heels. I want them looking off distantly with dramatic, sexy faces. I got a picture of somebody's kids. Very disappointing.
But it sounds like for you, they just... Well, no, you're just a different story, but it seems like they can't win. They drive people crazy when they do those insane Christmas photos. This one's like they're trying to keep it real, do like a normal thing, but then that makes you mad too,
right? So while everybody else gave them a 62, if they had done the one that I want, I would have given it a 95. I'll bet it would have scored a 10, right? Everybody else would have been hating on them for that.
I went 70. They're cute kids.
No, hey, if you're one of those kids listening, pardon me, that was not about you. It was about the brand. It was about the franchise. That's all.
The brand you were born into. Welcome.
Just so you know, let me give you two more real quick. The viral video we posted is of the kid who ate bacon for the first time. He was 1 year old. On Christmas Day, his mom gave him some bacon and posted the video. You've got to watch this video. It's scoring right now what is it getting? An 83. And it is, the kid, he learns the word bacon. I don't know how he knew the word bacon so quickly, but he puts it in his mouth, he chews it, and then he just goes, bacon, bacon. And he just starts shouting out over and over again, bacon. He's like, you guys have been hiding something from me here.
It's the joy of discovery.
Oh, man. When my oldest son was 1 or 2, we gave him his first bite of ice cream, and his eyes opened like saucers because he had this, you've been feeding me squashed peas for a year now, and you knew about this? It was very funny. On Vibe Score, it's one word. You can watch the viral video of bacon and score with the rest of us. One of the boys in the beat talking in the world of sports. That's coming up next. This is WGN. Got a minute or so to say hi to Kevin Powell and Sam Panionovich. They're getting ready to talk some sports for you. Hi, guys.
Hey, John.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm good. What's the lead today?
We're going to talk about these bowl game ratings. Nobody watched the bowls on New Year's Eve, and that happens when you start one at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then there's a blowout in the nightcap. So the ratings were down 33%. Did you watch either of the games?
I had Michigan State on, saw it was a terrible game, turned it off. So
right.
That might have hurt it. And then the same thing was true for the other game. I'm thinking of the Iowa game. What was the second game I'm thinking of? You had Michigan State. What was the second game?
The first one was Clemson-Oklahoma.
Oh, that one, yeah. Yeah, was that a closer game or was that a blowout as well?
There haven't been many good bowl games this season, John. It's been pretty bad, and yeah, as Sam mentioned.
Isn't the problem the distance of time between the regular season and the bowl games, too? I mean, you kind of forget which teams you know and like and, you know, are following. I mean,
some coaches leave, too. A lot of coaches leave for different jobs, and then a lot of players are selfish. They're thinking about the NFL and they don't really care. So there is a lot. You're right. A lot can happen in 4 or 5 weeks.
You know what also got in our way? Because I like watching bowl games. I like watching sports. I've been binge watching some shows that you do over your holidays. And so instead of binge watching bowl games, you're now watching The Nick season 1 and season 2. And I'm telling you guys, Cinemax, The Nick, The Nick, as in the Knickerbocker. It's a TV show about a hospital. Really good show. Watch it. There's my recommendation for you.
I've heard good things about Fargo. Have you seen Fargo?
Yeah, watch the whole season. Watch 1 and 2. 2 is better than 1. The one that was just done would be in my top 5 list of shows this year. Yeah, you won't go wrong with that. Better than the Michigan State game, that's for sure. Better than the Iowa game, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, there's 40 bowls. You're lucky if you get 5 good ones. No, that's the way it works.
Was there 40?
There are 40 this year. 40 games, including today was the Tax Slayer Bowl.
Mm-hmm. It would help the bowls if they didn't have such ridiculous sounding names. Do we agree on that?
Absolutely.
They should go back to naming them after fruit and flowers, because then you felt like it was something America could get around. These just sound like commercials, don't they?
Well, that's exactly what they are. I mean, these bowl games are strictly, many of them are just organized by the advertisers themselves, and they're put together that way. So, yeah, 40 bowls, it's kind of out of control, if you ask me.
Go ahead.
I still think you should take the 2 worst teams in Division I and make them play somewhere awful, and the team that loses gets, you know, abandoned into Division II or something. I've been saying that for years. You take the 2 worst teams.
Oh, like they do in soccer in Europe or something like that,
and
right?
You put them somewhere awful, too. You know, they're playing on a freighter or something. You know, like somewhere just Upper Peninsula, Michigan.
Not bad, guys. Have a good show. We'll
see you, John.
Listening.
Thanks,
all right?
John.
Right around the corner on WGN.